date is the 26th of August 2015, and I'm here in the old building with Julien Legrand. My name is Clara Cook, and I'm interviewing him as part of the Oral History Project for the 120th anniversary of LSE. Julien, please can you state your full name for me and your date of birth?
I'm Julien Legrand, Richard Titmuss Professor of Social Policy at the LSE. My date of birth is 29th of May,
1945. Julien, can you tell me when you first came to LSE?
I first came in 78 and stayed until 87. And when I went to the University of Bristol, and then I came back in 1993. Apart from a two-year stint at number 10 Downing Street, where I was seconded for a couple of years in 2003-2005, I've been here ever since.
What was your first impressions of LSE when you first arrived?
Well, I remember walking out of the St Clement's building, as it was, with a professor of economics called Terence Gorman, who I think went on to work in Oxford. He was just about to leave the LSE, and as we walked out of it, he said, "My God, I love this place." Now, I looked at it, and it was pouring with rain. It was Houghton Street, which is not the most attractive street in the world. I was just coming here from the University of Sussex, which has a gorgeous campus in the South Downs. And I thought, Christ, how could anybody enjoy this place? The trouble is, the truth is that now, frankly, I love this place.
And what changed your mind?
Let me tell you why. I suppose, I mean, if it's not being too presumptuous or too arrogant, I suppose I would see myself as a kind of quintessential LSE person, in the sense that I fit the LSE very well and the LSE fits me very well. I've worked in three separate parts of the LSE. I've been a member of the economics department. I've been a member of, for 2 years I was working at the Suntory Toyota International Centre at Stickard. And I've been a member of the Social Policy Department. And I'm now actually about to join, a fourth area, which is the Marshall Institute, which has just been set up to study philanthropy and social entrepreneurship. So, I mean, I think in some ways that encapsulates what I find so valuable about the LSE. The range of areas it deals with, the fact that you're not confined to one particular discipline or others, the fact I work across a whole range of disciplines, across economics, of course, but social policy, political science, philosophy. I work across all these areas. I have colleagues whom I talk to in all these areas and have worked across a variety of interdisciplinary programmes. So I think one of the major things I value about the LSE is just that, the ability to work with a wide variety of highly stimulating colleagues across an enormous range of subjects and disciplines. There are, of course, other things I value, the students. The students I teach tend to be mature students. I don't do very much undergraduate teaching, and never have done very much undergraduate teaching, mostly postgraduate teaching. I really value that. I'm often struck by the fact that when the students themselves are asked what is the most valuable thing about the LSE, one would like to think they would say, oh, how wonderfully stimulating the professors are and how marvellous the curriculum is and so on. Actually, what they tend to say is the other students. That's something I can quite understand, because the students are often really sparkling and thoroughly enjoyable to teach. And I suppose the third thing that I really relish about the LSE is its location in central London. That's not just because of the geography, but because of the proximity to government. I've worked in government and had a lot of links with all the things that go on in London, including government. And it seems to me that's been absolutely an essential part of my LSE experience. And as I say, one of the reasons why I value it so highly.
Can you explain to me a little bit more about how your role has changed over the years?
Well, I started off in economics, and then that was from 1978 as a lecturer in economics. In 1985, Professor Tony Atkinson asked me to spend 2 years working on the welfare state programme, which in the Suntory Toyota International Centre Economics and Related Disciplines sticker, and so I was really heading up a kind of research unit there. That was a remarkable time. I can remember. There was a suite of offices. I had one of the offices, but on one side of me was Mervyn King, who then became Governor of the Bank of England. Another side was Tony Atkinson, who head of Nuffield College and I think became the Drummond Professor of Political Economy at Cambridge. There was Richard Layard just round the corner, eventually become Lord Layard. And right in. There was Nick Stern, who was also in a nearby office. Nick Stern was the chief economist at the World Bank and then permanent secretary at the Treasury. John Hills, who's another highly distinguished expert. There was an extraordinary range of people. Anne Power, who's a housing expert, who knows. Anyway, a whole range of exciting people. And that in a way, that classic example of the kind of stimulus one could get from being part of the LSE. In 1987, that's to say after I'd been 2 years working in the head of the Welfare State Programme in Stickard, I then got a job as a Professor of Public Policy at the University of Bristol. It was about the time when you start looking around for promotion and for getting chairs. And I did that until 1993. And then I was asked, it was suggested that I apply for the Richard Titmuss Chair of Social Policy back at the LSE in the Social Policy Department, not in the Economics Department. So I applied and I was lucky enough to get it. And here I am.
And you mentioned working with these interesting and exciting people from lots of different disciplines. What other things have been the main highlights of your time here? Like looking back, things that really stuck out in your memory?
Certain students. There are some students who have been enormously important to me in terms of both in terms of being enormously rewarding to teach, also, frankly, from whom I have learnt a lot. Often PhD students, but not only PhD students, some master students as well, and indeed some undergraduates have been very important to me. So they would definitely figure. What else has been valuable? Well, as I said earlier, I think probably the contacts with government, the fact that. Somebody once said about the senior dining room that it was a little like the Café Royal in Paris used to be in the 1930s. Apparently, I wasn't around at the time, but apparently in the 1930s, in the Café Royal in Paris, if you sat there, if you were a certain kind of person, you sat there long enough, everybody you know would pass by. The senior common room here, or the senior dining room here, the LSE, is very much that. If you sit there long enough, everybody you know in the world of policy and the social sciences will come through at some point. At any point in time, there might be a minister having lunch over there, a permanent secretary having lunch over here, a star, a Nobel Prize winning academic having lunch there, and so on. It's that kind of feeling you're at the centre of what's going on, both in the social science world, but also in the public policy world.
Would you say that's your favourite place on campus?
The senior common room.
Or what is your favourite
place? I think I probably would, actually, yes. The senior dining room, I always enjoy. I take a lot of people to lunch there, and I always... So I obviously regard it quite highly. Yes, I think it probably is.
Looking back, what do you think have been the biggest challenges working at LSE?
I've had very little... problems with the LSE. It's quite difficult for me to, as you can see, I have a very positive general view of the institution and of my time here. I find it difficult, and on the whole, it's been very good to me. I mean, I suppose when I worked in the economics department, but this isn't really a problem for the LSE, economics has a kind of status hierarchy of theory and applied, where theory is significantly higher status and is more valued than straightforward applied work of the kind that I do. And I suppose that was a bit of an issue. But I can't say it really caused me any major problems. As I say, on the whole, the LSE has been very good to me. Are there any other challenges particularly that I can think of? I mean, there's the usual stuff about space and it's a cramped site in central London. I do feel a bit that we probably should do, and I personally should have done in my career, more teaching. I'm not sure that we do. The students get about 8 hours of contact time from us a week. I'm not sure that's enough. It's more than many universities. My daughter has been at Sussex and she gets 3 hours contact time a week, which seems outrageous. So I think we probably ought to put more effort into teaching. But many people at the LSE are aware of that, and that to some extent is being addressed now. So I suppose that's the principal area's challenge I would find.
How has the campus changed since you've been here?
Well, it's changed enormously, partly in scale. First of all, I talk particularly about my department of social policy. That's changed enormously. I mean, when I first joined it in 1993, it was very small. Only about 8 to 9 members of staff, and it was one of the, and a colleague described it to me as one of the weakest departments in the school. And in fact, I think some of my erstwhile economics colleagues were quite disappointed that I had said that I wouldn't be happy shifting to what was allegedly a weak department. In fact, over that time, the social policy department is now it's now one of the strongest departments in the school, and possibly after economics itself, the strongest. It's very large. It's very successful. It gets 5-star ratings on all the research assessment exercises, and it's even this year has done quite well on its teaching scores, which is good. So and it scores very high on research income. So that's been a big transformation while I've been here, and a very important transformation for me. The campus itself has grown enormously. I mean, the library, I still think of the new library, although of course it isn't new at all. It's been a great improvement. Although, of course, one of the interesting things about the development of IT has been that one goes to the library less and less, uses it less and less. The development of IT itself has been a major transformational factor, both in terms of, chiefly, I suppose, in terms of research. And it does mean things like you don't go to the library as much as one did. It means you've got everything access at your fingertips to statistics that you might need, tools you might need of various kinds, research materials and so on. So that's been an enormous change and has made research much more, much easier and better and much pleasanter to do. So that's been a, that's a big shift. The build, of course, it has expanded. The LSE has expanded. I can't, I don't know the exact figures, but my guess is it's probably doubled in, at least in size since I first came here in the, in 78. Again, I don't think it's, although that, that is a quantitative change, I don't think it's been a qualitative change. In the sense, I don't think there's been, the LSE hasn't really changed its nature massively through dramatically expanding in that way. A lot of the things I value, which I mentioned earlier, seem to me there just as much now as they were when I arrived.
What do you think that the future of LSE will look like? What do you think the future of LSE will be?
Well, I'm a great believer, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It doesn't seem to me that the LSE is in need of a major transformation of any kind. Possibly we could get even a bit bigger. I think that, that might be, we could move a little bigger. But I don't think there's any real need for some kind of massive change or massive reform. I would like to think that the LSE will carry on in pretty much the same way as it's been carrying on in the last few years.
Very succinct and to the point. You pretty much answered most of my questions. It's like 16 minutes in.
Sorry.
No, are you used to being interviewed?
Yes. Lots of. Actually, I suppose that is something we haven't mentioned much, which is access to the media. I think that's a, an important part of being at LSE, actually, at least for me, has been the media have ready access to you, and you have ready access to the media. And that's very important. I mean, because I'm a great believer in thinking that academics shouldn't live in an ivory tower, that they should interact not only with their students and their colleagues, but with the world outside, so to speak. And so the ability to forge relationships with key individuals in the media, be able to work effectively, to present, say, one's research to the media and so on, and, has been, I think it's been a big plus for me.
Does that also apply to influencing or giving information or speaking to policymakers?
Yes, it does, very much so. And that's, you can influence policymakers in two ways. You can either go via the back door, you know, a quiet lunch with such and such, some permanent secretary or whatever, you can make a loud noise in the media, jump up and down about a piece of research or a particular finding you think is very important or a particular policy that you need to critique or so on. And the nice thing about the LSE is, in the sense, you've got opportunity to do both of those things, whichever seems more appropriate at the time.
Did you find that it's easier to do that here at LSE than any other higher education institution?
Yes, I did. That's for two reasons, I think. The other institutions I've worked at have been the University of Sussex and the University of Bristol. Now, they're neither of them not far from London, but it's a significant trip. And if you're in Brighton or in Bristol, and you want to have a quick word with a civil servant or a politician in London, it's at least a morning and possibly a day. If you're at the LSE, it's just nip down for a cup of coffee in the Strand or whatever. So it's a very different animal. And the second thing, of course, is also the reputation of the LSE. LSE being a member of LSE, you have an authority, which, I mean, outside of Oxford and Cambridge, probably there's no other British university that offers that degree of authority. So that is clearly an area. One area I could talk a bit about is working the difference between working in academia and working in government. I did work for 2 years at Number 10 Downing Street, and it was a fascinating experience as an academic. I was a bit different from most of the people working in 10 Downing Street. I was a senior professor at LSE. I was transferred over to work for 2 years. I was advising on health policy, among other things, but also to a degree on education policy and various areas of policy. And a lot of my colleagues were very young, men and women, sort of maybe just out of university, often themselves on their way looking for a university career. A political career, like becoming an MP and so on. So I was very different, and I must say I did find it quite challenging working up. And I mean, there were a number of features. There were silly things like I'm used to, if someone asked me to write a paper, as a professor at the LSE, or indeed any British university, or at least any university, it must be one of the most unaccountable jobs in the world. In the sense, you're very much on your own. Provide you turn up for your lectures and produce a bit of research, nobody really fusses you. Nobody tries to dictate what you do. Working in Downing Street, you're a slave. And you're a slave to possibly the most unreasonable person in the world, who's the Prime Minister, doing the most unreasonable job in the world. Interestingly enough, you're a slave in Downing Street. Outside of Downing Street, you're a god. Because everyone assumes that you're speaking for the Prime Minister or in some way, whatever. I was really shocked at my ability to be able to talk to ministers and tell them what to do, really, because that's what the Prime Minister wants. And, you know, who am I? Just a jumped-up academic, and here I am talking to these elected cabinet ministers or whatever, who you think have much greater authority than anything I could. But, anyway... So one of the shocks was suddenly being at the mercy, basically, of somebody else's timetable. I remember walking when I first got the job at Number 10. I walked past Tony Blair. Tony Blair was Prime Minister at the time, in the corridor, and he said, "Welcome." And then he said, "I want something on dentistry. Could you write me something on dentistry?" Because dentistry was a big problem at that time, big political problem. So I said, yes, thinking about a month's time, we're going to probably produce something reasonable. He said, "Tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock. I was going out to the theatre that evening. Well, I didn't get to the theatre. I wrote the paper, and then he didn't read it for 2 or 3 days. It irritated me. However, to be fair to Tony Blair, he wasn't like that. He was very good actually at reading papers you sent him. Actually, again, it was rather similar. Again, this business about from being in a very senior position to being at somebody else's mercy. You'd send him in papers that you'd written, and he'd read them, and he kind of marked them, like I was used to doing, marking undergraduate essays. There'd be ticks here or there, or could do better comments about. So that was quite a shift of experience, shift. But there was a more fundamental issue, which was, I suppose, I felt... the thing about being an academic, particularly an academic who pontificates on policy, you can feel free to be irresponsible. I mean, in a way, you're encouraged to be irresponsible. In a sense, that's what we want our academics to do, is to engage in blue sky thinking, to think outside the box, all the cliches, but to think very widely and not feel constrained by political considerations or that sort of thing. Working in Downing Street, you do feel constrained, obviously, heavily by political considerations. You have to think about that. But also, you feel responsible because what you say, in some sense, matters. Because what you say will influence the actions of government, and the actions of government influence people. And so what you say has consequences in a way that you're in academia, much less so. So there's a degree of responsibility there. I must say, I mean, one of the things I learned was that I just wish that my academic colleagues could, on occasion, be a little more responsible. I mean, time after time, I would hear academic colleagues go on the radio and trash some particular policy, a pet policy of mine, and they go through all the list of all the problems with it. Now, that's an easy thing to do. Anybody can do that, and I've done it myself. Every policy has got some sort of problem or some sort of difficulty, and you just go through the list. And by the time you finish the list, it sounds as though the policy is dead. And what the interviewer would never do would say, "All right, so you clearly don't like that policy. What would you do? What would you do?" Because I think that would floor them. In many cases, that would floor them. But there are many academics who see themselves, I think, see their role as that of perpetual critic, social critic, political critic, or whatever. I tend to think about what we can do, and most of my interventions, policy work, such as it is, has been dreaming up new policy ideas of various kinds, policy ways forward. And again, that's something that some of my colleagues don't like. Also, it has to be said, I don't approve of. Sometimes they often don't approve of. I mean, I think that my many of a few of my colleagues regard my involvement with the political world as contamination.
Why would they think that?
Well, they think you're ceasing to be an objective analyst of what's going on, and you have become a player. You are part of the political process, and actually, that's true. I was working for Tony Blair. I was part of his team, and if a government, I've worked on various aspects of government policy. Various ideas, the Child Trust Fund, the Pupil Premium, a whole range of things like that. And I would, there were often ideas that I'd either originated or been part of the group that originated them, so I had responsibility for them. And so I would be an advocate for those ideas, which, as I say, and it looked at times, inevitably, as though you're sort of become, I don't know, a government supporter instead of being a government critic standing back from government and the world. People become suspicious of you and suspicious of your motives and so on. So I think there is that definitely goes on for people, and it's not just me, but people involved in close policy work, policy work that's close to government of whatever political persuasion, are often viewed with some suspicion by their colleagues as being sort of has gone over to the other side, so to speak.
Do you think the LSE is a place where people are objective normally, though?
Well, that's a good point. I think that there are several people at LSE now, and indeed historically, all of who have been involved in not wholly dissimilar ways to me in government. And the LSE of any British university probably has more links of that kind than anywhere else. So there is a history of it. And, I mean, it's clearly... I mean, I say I think some colleagues disapproved of what I did. I don't know if I've actually got very much evidence of that. And it hasn't affected my career at LSE in any way. So I may be oversensitive to that. And certainly I do think that LSE, if anywhere, is the place where that would be least likely to be a problem.
There is a history of LSE being involved with social reform.
Well, and indeed, and particularly, of course, in my department. I mean, Richard Titmuss was and in economics, of course. I mean, some of the key people in economics have worked in government and been closely involved in government. So yes, it is a, as you say, it's less of a problem. And again, maybe it's one of the great advantages of LSE that you can actually do that without it damaging your reputation or your career too much?
This is a question that I should ask. Have you been involved in any social activities or staff networks while you've been here?
I saw that on your list of questions. I don't know that I have, really. No.
Most faculty haven't, it's just...
Yes.
I've been told to ask.
Yes, that's right. I remember, I was thinking back a bit on that... I remember at the University of Sussex, I had a minor part in a play that the faculty put on, and I can't think in all my years there, I've done anything quite like that here. I don't think there's any. The director has parties periodically, and so one goes along to the various parties and stuff that go on.
What are the director's parties like?
They're fairly formal events. They're often for members of council, for members of governors of the LSE and selected academics. And then there's the Fellows Dinner every year, which is a black tie affair, which is where the honorary fellows of the LSE plus selected academics and again governors of the LSE have dinner. So there have been those kind of social occasions, which on the whole, again, I think, they tend to be a bit formal, but quite enjoyable.
They're sort of work-related.
They are work-related, yeah. Yes, they're not. They're not outside of that, yes.
So if that, because you're so succinct and to the point and good at answering questions... you pretty much covered pretty much everything I was going to ask you. Is just in light of everything we've talked about, is there anything that I haven't asked you or anything that we haven't mentioned that you'd like to tell me about?
I don't know if there is, really. LSE is a great place to be. And great fan of the institution.